Welcome to the Biology of Trauma podcast, the show that provides professionals with the knowledge and tools for effective, science-based solutions for the trauma healing journey. I am your host, Dr. Amy, and I've done the hard work so you can stop your endless searching, have a roadmap for your own work, and be able to help others more powerfully. Welcome to this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Amy. Stress, it's actually one of the most misunderstood responses of our body. Most people are told to manage their stress, which actually is one of the worst recommendations that we could give. In this episode, we are going to be taking a deep dive into anxiety. Why? Because anxiety is actually one of the most common symptoms that adults and children are challenged by in our world today. How can we actually use anxiety to help us? Is one question answered in this episode. My guest is licensed marriage and family therapist, Emma McAdam. She has worked in settings like juvenile corrections, adventure therapy programs, high schools, wilderness therapy programs, residential treatment centers. Emma is someone that shows up in the world to make life better for others. And she does this through sharing practical information, and you will know this by the number of YouTube subscribers that she has on her channel. What you will learn in this episode: the behavioral patterns at the root of anxiety, the different forms of avoidance of stress and how they actually contribute to anxiety, how it's not the trigger, but the behavior and the thought combination that cause the anxiety, how to know you are being affected by hidden anxiety, the kinds of messages that we can gain from our anxiety, and what to do if you wake up in the middle of the night and feel anxious. Welcome, Emma.
And so I'm excited to have this conversation with you today.
Awesome. I'm super happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. As we talk about anxiety, I know that you've seen a lot over the years. And I know that there are behaviors that we can get stuck in, behavioral patterns, thought patterns that can be actually perpetuating this cycle that we get stuck into. So as you look at behavioral patterns and thought patterns, what do you see as the root cause of anxiety?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I want to step back really quick and define a term. So we often talk about stress and anxiety and worry as kind of all being the same thing. And I just want to make sure that we're a little bit clear on our terms here. So when we perceive a danger or we perceive a threat, our body is going to have a fear response, and it's going to kick off that fight, flight, freeze response to survive. And that's the thought that says this might be dangerous. That would be what we would call a worry or a fear-based thought or an interpretation. And then the stress response is what goes on in our bodies. So that's the fight, flight, freeze response, the cortisol, the adrenaline, the changes and all of that. And the anxiety response is when that's kind of an ongoing process where we're constantly kind of drowning or constantly dipping our toes in this fight, flight, freeze response all day, throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year, and it builds up in our system. So as I talk about anxiety, I'm going to be talking more about this kind of chronic stress response going on in our body that's contributed to by our thoughts of danger. If we are like, let's just imagine a regular scenario. We're walking through a park at night, and we hear a noise that seems like it's following us. We're going to have this thought that's like, oh my gosh, am I in danger? Like, is someone coming after me? What's going on? We have the fight, flight, freeze response. And if in that moment we like run our guts out and we run away and we sprint home, then we're going to have this feeling of relief. And we're going to feel like, oh, phew, I escaped. I escaped that danger. And it's going to feel better. And then our brain is going to be like, you know what? Next time I hear like a noise, I'm going to do that again because that's how I survived this experience. This is how our brain learns that when we escape something, when we avoid something, we're going to increase that fear response. We're going to increase that anxiety response is when we avoid it. Now, if we're walking through the park, we hear a noise following us, we feel that fight, flight, freeze response, and out of the bushes jumps our friend and we face it. We realize our friend was pranking us or something else happens where we face that fear. Then we're like, oh my gosh, it was just you. You were pranking me. What the heck? Then we often have a natural response to the parasympathetic response, which counterbalances that fight, flight, freeze response. And we shake it off. We might shake a little bit. We might laugh a little bit. We might tell the story to our friends later. And that kind of triggers our body's natural ability to resolve this fight, flight, freeze response or this fear response. So this is our body's natural ability to get kind of stimulated, to get scared, to get worked up, to face a problem, solve it. And then we have a natural inherent ability to resolve stress and anxiety. And the same thing can happen when there's a problem at work. So let's say you get an email from your boss. He says, hey, you have to do this huge project and it has to be done by Friday. We're like, oh gosh, I have this interpretation of like, oh, this is a little bit dangerous. I could lose my job if I don't do what I'm supposed to do. Now, at this point, we have a little bit of a stress response. And we can choose, do I face this problem or do I avoid this problem? If we avoid this problem, we might procrastinate. We're actually really good at avoiding problems. We can come up with all these mental strategies to avoid things. And that can include just blaming our boss, be like, oh my gosh, my boss is such a jerk and I have to live with him all the time and this is terrible. Or we can watch Netflix all day, or we can just do a crappy job and try not to care. We have all these abilities to avoid facing the challenges that we have in life. And that avoidance, that secret subtle forms of avoidance that we do every day, that's actually, it makes us feel a little bit better. And in the long run, it makes our brain reinforce anxiety. So if we look at what really contributes to the root of anxiety, we have to check ourselves and see, where am I interpreting something as dangerous and how am I avoiding it instead of facing it? This is the root cause of anxiety. We might think it's the stimulus. We might think it's the email from our boss because that's what feels like it's causing anxiety. But it's truly the belief that we're in danger followed by avoidance. Now, we can talk about what facing it looks like as we go on. We can talk about what facing that looks like. But I think it's really important to recognize that avoidance is what takes us out of this natural pathway of resolving stress and anxiety and puts us into the place where we get stuck in a loop where our anxiety grows.
And I can see how this can be something that starts in early life, childhood, this pattern of avoiding, and there's the relief that comes from avoiding.
Yeah.
And that relief then that creates the motivation for our brain to say, ooh, that worked. And let me to avoid rather than face. And before we know it, we're adults still with this learned helplessness type of pattern.
Yep, that's exactly right. Our brains are brilliant at coming up with very creative strategies of avoidance. So the most common forms you might see is, oh, I'm just like going to avoid work, or I'm not going to go to work, or I'm not going to answer that email, or I'm not going to speak up. But we have much more subtle forms of avoidance that include like helplessness. Oh, poor me. That's like a form of avoidance. Or, oh, he's such a jerk. That's like, oh, I'm not going to really decide what my responsibility is here. I'm going to just avoid it by focusing on other people. Or substances, keeping busy. Just, okay, I've got a lot of emails, so I'm just going to be really busy. That's another form of avoidance, workaholism. Our brain is so incredibly impressive at trying to get a little bit of relief by avoidance that in the long run, it's easy to get kind of stuck in a pattern of anxiety and not know how we got there.
And as we look at the avoidance, it really is not being fully present to it. And so coming back to this idea that disconnection is always a part of a trauma response. And so that disconnection can be reinforced and we don't even realize that we're avoiding by just not investing our emotional energy or not investing our full mental presence because, well, let me multitask or let me also have this going on. Let me just not be fully present to the problems. And we don't even realize that we're actually avoiding it in the meantime.
Yeah, I love that you bring that up. I love that you bring that up. And especially as children, if we're faced with stress, we often have less options for avoidance. And so we tend to turn to more internal forms of avoidance like numbing, dissociation, keeping busy, people pleasing, trying to go along with things, or the alternate side of like, oh, just being really oppositional to try and avoid that sense of anxiety.
So fascinating. And that moment of interpretation seems like the key critical point where we have some decision power when we can realize that we're making a decision about level of danger that we're in from this stimulus. And so this really comes back down to even neuroception and the polyvagal concept of everything, our body is making a decision about. Whether you consciously recognize it or not, our body is always deciding my level of safety or my level of danger. And there is a physiological response with that.
That's right. That's right. And it is, it's a choice point at that place where we have that interpretation. And I think a lot of times when we feel anxiety, we don't realize that at some point there almost always has been some kind of interpretation, whether that's on a conscious level or a little bit of a subconscious level. But if you look at what people are most scared of, okay, public speaking, how are you interpreting that as dangerous? That's people's number one fear, one of them, fear of death, fear of public speaking. So often public speaking is rated higher and people are afraid of rejection. If you look at an evolutionary level here, it's like people are afraid of being kicked out of their village and starving to death out in the wilderness. That's why we're afraid of rejection. And if we truly sit with rejection, say, what would happen if I got rejected? Would I starve to death? And we can consciously and cognitively say, well, no, I am safe. Even if I got rejected, even if all of you lovely people hated me and threw virtual tomatoes at me, I would still be safe. So we can do this work cognitively. We can change how we think, and that's going to change our interpretation. And if I say, you know what? I am confident. I am capable. If people like me, it's okay. If people don't like me, it's okay. We can change that interpretation cognitively. But really, one of the most powerful ways to create that sense of safety is to show our bodies and to show our mind that we can face it by actually facing it. And that's how we teach our brain. We train our brain on a deeper level, on a neurological level, that like, oh, actually, we can face these things. It's nice. We can change our interpretation, how we think. We can work on our thought patterns. That's a really effective strategy, like letting go of catastrophizing. Or, I mean, we can talk about this a little bit later. We can talk more about worrying as the root source of generalized anxiety disorder. Like that's what's making us feel like we're in danger throughout the day. And we can work on that cognitive aspect. That's one of our tools. And then one of the other most essential tools is just learning to really face these fears through experience.
And yet that is one of the hardest things to shift our nervous system when it's been doing avoidance for all of our life. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden we come in and we consciously decide, okay, I'm going to face my fears. Going to face stimulus. But you're right. Like it's a conscious decision. And how do we align with our body to have our body be okay with facing our fears?
This is a good question because what happens a lot of times when we get stuck in the anxiety cycle is the actual trigger that people interpret as danger is those sensations in our body of anxiety. So I might start to feel a little anxious. My stomach might feel a little upset, or my hands might be sweaty, or I might feel a little shaky. And then I think, oh no, I'm feeling anxious. This must be dangerous. I have to make myself not feel anxious. I have to make my feelings go away. And how well does that work? Like everyone from experience here can know like that does not work. So when we interpret our own body sensations as being threatening, that fuels that anxiety cycle. So what do we do instead with anxiety? I think taking a different stance with anxiety can be really helpful, a different internal stance where we say, oh, we drop some judgmental language. So judgmental language around anxiety is often taught to us by the media. Oh my gosh, we're having an epidemic of anxiety. This is so bad. This is so dangerous. This is so pervasive. And it's like, no. Anxiety has a function. Anxiety is uncomfortable, but it's not dangerous. Anxiety is not going to hurt you. Feeling moments of anxiety is not going to cause damage to your body. Chronic stress can be harmful, but anxiety in and of itself is not going to hurt you. So we take a stance of saying, this is uncomfortable. Does this have a message for me? We ask it questions. We get curious instead of judgmental. So we take these sensations in our body, say, oh, my stomach's getting upset. I say, oh, hello, stomach. And then sometimes I'll put my hand on my stomach or my shoulders. My shoulders are getting tight. Hello, shoulders. We get curious. Huh. I wonder like what it would be like to describe this feeling. What would it be like to sit with this feeling instead of desperately try to run away from it? What would it be like to send this feeling compassion as if it was a family member who I don't really like enjoy being with, but it's still part of my family, like my sister, like, oh, this is my sister here. I don't always agree with her, but she's here. And me spending all this effort trying to push her out of the room is not going to make my day better. You know, so those are some of the strategies I like to teach around those feelings when people have this gut reaction of like avoidance. What do you think about that, Amy? What do you teach people when they're like scared of their feelings or their anxiety is their stimulus?
Well, you have to remember that I come from a medical background. So I was taught that I'm supposed to help people numb their feelings.
Right.
Oh, you're feeling anxious. Well, I have a medication for you that will take that away. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're depressed. I've got a medication that will take that away for you. So this was literally my whole training. So then when I started somatic therapy training with Dr. Peter Levine, it was a completely different shift for me. This was new for me. And here I am sitting in a room with all of you lovely therapists and talking about your feelings. And I'm like, oh, come on, you guys. Can we stop talking about feelings? Can we stop? You know, can we? and then he used a question that has since changed my life. And it was really this response to someone that he was working with who had anxiety and she was in the loop of thoughts. And he said, can you just say, I'm having the thought that, mm-hmm. or I'm having the feeling that, I'm having the sensation of queasiness in my stomach.
Yeah.
And in that moment, it was such a shifter for me to go from my model of, well, no, like it's my job. It's my job to take these symptoms away to, but it's the message and it has a purpose. And if I try to block that, I'm blocking the purpose that it's here to tell me and to serve for me. So that is what I love to be able to see now is being able to go from a place of judgmental effect around labeling something as bad versus getting curious about it is, I'm having the thought that this feels dangerous. I'm having the thought that this email might be my boss telling me that he's firing me. I'm having the thought that, and then it just puts it into its proper place. It's just a thought. It's just sensation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I love that. And like, so stepping away, I think we have a natural knee-jerk reaction to anxiety because anxiety is uncomfortable. We have a knee-jerk reaction that says, I need to suppress this. I need to make this go away. I need to fix this. What breathing exercise can I use to make this go away? And as long as we're in that stance of, I have to escape, avoid, or control or suppress this, as long as we're in that stance, we're accidentally sending a message to our brain that anxiety is a danger. And then we're trying to avoid it. And that can contribute to that anxiety cycle. So the alternative, like you just said, is, oh, can we describe this? I'm having the sensation that, or, oh, when my stomach is like this, here's what it feels like. And you pretend to be a curious scientist, just describing butterflies in the stomach for the first time as if they've never been described. And we step into a descriptive place. And we say, you know, anxiety can serve a real function. I'll tell a quick story on that. One night I woke up in the middle of the night and I was having a lot of feelings of anxiety, a lot of sensations. I couldn't sleep. And my immediate reaction was, I need to sleep. I have to sleep. I've got to get back to sleep. And how well does that work? Like everyone here can know that doesn't work. So instead I said, okay, my anxiety is trying to tell me something. It's sending me a message. I wonder what that message is. And just because your anxiety says something doesn't mean it's true, right? It can say something and it can lie to you. Feelings can lie. But just because anxiety or any emotion sends you a message doesn't mean we have to believe the emotion. We just listen to it like it's a smoke alarm and say, oh, a smoke alarm goes off sometimes when there's a fire and sometimes when you've just taken a hot shower. Like it doesn't always mean something, but sometimes it does. Sometimes our emotions are like, a little too sensitive, a little too sensitive is the wrong word. Sometimes our emotions send us a message that we can say, oh, I've checked that and it's okay. There's nothing wrong right now. But so I woke up in the middle of the night woke up in the middle of the night and I felt anxious and I asked the question, is there a message here for me? And I was like, actually, yes. Like the way I'm parenting, I'm not feeling good about. Something's not quite right. I'm a little bit worried about how this is going to work out with my kids in the long run. And that anxiety woke me up. It was uncomfortable. It was unpleasant. And if I had put all my energy into it, I have to make my anxiety go away. I'm going to take some substance to make it go away. I'm going to do something avoidant. I'm going to go for a run. I'm going to do breathing exercises. I would never have faced the reality that like, oh, I actually need to change this aspect of how I'm interacting in my life. And so I sat down and I wrote it down. I said, okay, here's what needs to be different. Here's how we're going to put this into place. And I felt a lot better. And it wasn't because I focused on the emotion. It was because I focused on like, what is the message anxiety has to tell me? Because anxiety is not out to get you. It's just your body trying to send you a little warning sign sometimes. And then facing that problem, we improved some things in our home and things got better. So I think anxiety sometimes is a message. It's like, let's solve this problem. If your boss sends you an email, hurry up, you've got to do this job right away by Friday. Facing it might look like saying, okay, I'm going to get activated. I'm going to get a lot of stress. I'm going to sleep less. I'm going to work harder and I'm going to finish this project by Friday. Or facing it might look like saying, well, boss, I have 6 things on my priority list. I'm happy to put that one at the top of my priority list, but that means I'll be pushing the other 5 back. And this is how that will look on my deadlines. Is that what you'd like me to do? And you get a lot of clarity with your boss on that and say, here's what I can do, here's what I can't do, and here's what I won't do. And that is another way to face that anxiety. You say, well, actually, no, I'm not just going to put more things on my plate. And that's a form of facing that problem.
I love that. It's the clarity that our anxiety seeks. The clarity of what are my priorities? What's my plan? Mm-hmm. How am I going to accomplish this? And without that clarity, without a plan, as long as there's unresolved tension between you and another person that you're trying to avoid, the anxiety is still going to be there in the background, always, mm-hmm. and leading mm-hmm. to that chronic stuff that you're talking about, where we never actually then fully land in parasympathetic because we're just dancing with levels of danger every moment of our day.
Mm-hmm. And I think that clarity is so important because if we have an actual problem and we have that activating response, that fight, flight, freeze response, and then we face the problem and solve it, then we have that parasympathetic response. Our body calms down and we're like, we're good. But what happens a lot with generalized anxiety disorder is we don't realize it, but in the background, we're having worries pop up every 2 minutes throughout the day. And that's triggering this micro stress response all throughout your day. And then you end up having this kind of chronic stress that you're not even noticing that you're worrying, having that interpretation of danger throughout the day. And that contributes to chronic stress and chronic anxiety. And that's where it's like not super helpful. I think that is what's happening when people get stuck in chronic anxiety is they don't have clarity around that thought or worry that's causing that stress response.
There are so many people where being stressed is what feels normal and safe to them. You and I come and we're like, okay, we're going to bring safety in. We're going to bring parasympathetic in. And their system, their body goes into this almost like shock and anxiety because anxiety feels safe to them. Their system has this belief and perception that they need to be in that state in order to survive and to be okay.
Yeah. And then we'll see them kind of get stuck in this elevated state in their nervous system for a while and then crash and you get exhausted and burn out. Yeah. I mean, I come from a home where being busy is the epitome of goodness. Right. And I think that is a form. That's
good girl. If you were busy all the time.
That's right. How you doing? I'm busy. Oh, good job.
Good job.
Yeah, I think, and we have to get really honest with ourselves that it's a form of avoidance. Being busy is a form of avoidance. I'm running, I'm in the park and I'm running, even though it's my best friend back there who wants to like joke around with me. I'm running to try and feel like I'm good enough because I'm scared I'm not good enough. I'm running because that might mean that like, if I just do more, then I'll be okay. And we have to be really honest with ourselves that that's a lie. It's just a straight up lie.
How would a person know that that was part of their anxiety? Because that can be so subconscious.
Yeah.
And been how we've always lived. And so we don't know any different. Mm. And how would a person even be able to get that honest with them where they realize that this is part of their belief system?
Yeah. Do you get anxious when you try to relax? When you have nothing to do, does it make you anxious? When you try to meditate or sit down for 15 minutes, do you feel really uncomfortable? And then I would ask, is that value-based? Is that because you have a mission that you are driving towards and it's so important you don't want to let it go? Or is that because you're scared? And I think there are people out there who are generally very active and very driven and very busy, but it's because they have their eye on a mission and a purpose. And then there's people who's like, they sit down and they feel uncomfortable, so they just have to do something to keep busy. And that's, I would say that would be the determining factor of whether what you're doing is intentional or emotionally reactive.
And this is the value of gaining the message, like you talked about. What is the message here for me? Mm-hmm. Is it because I have a big purpose and mm-hmm. this is feeding me? This is my calling and it feels good. It doesn't feel dangerous. It feels like I'm living my purpose versus the stillness feels dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Am I running from something or am I running towards something? Is like how if you can feel the difference in your body when you're excited and passionate and purposeful, you're running towards something with joy. And when you are scared, you are running away from that fear.
There's one other element that I've seen a lot that people create that anxiety because it feels better for them. And that's when they've got a strong freeze response that they're trying to avoid. And they're trying to stay out of that, fall into the exhaustion and the collapse. And so they think that if I can just keep in the stress, that'll be my strategy to not let myself feel or go into that freeze response, that people can be forming their strategies to create anxiety, to use anxiety to stay out of that freeze response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've definitely seen that. And that's interesting. So there's two ways I can see this happening. And one is like, oh, things are actually dangerous or scary. So let's say you're in a home where things are stressful or abusive, or let's say you're in a war zone where things are frightening. And look at Britain in the War of Britain, 1940s. And they're like, keep your chin up. Don't be sad. Let's do this. Like, we're okay. Don't be sad. Like, bottle your emotions up. In a war, that's like somewhat functional in the short term. It can work in the short term. It's a short term adaptive response, but it's not a sustainable long term response. We can't get stuck in that pattern of doing that. So when things are actually stressful, being busy is a short term adaptive response. It's going to feel better too, but the long term strategy has to be getting out of that dangerous situation and creating a sense of sustainable peace. And that's where people get stuck. The other place I see this is like, if you look at a relationship that's like kind of functioning okay, but a little bit dysfunctional, people are getting distant. People are getting like isolated from each other. If there's a crisis or if there's a drama or if like, let's say it's a marriage, if one of their kids gets sick or hurt, you see closeness happen. Right? You see people draw together in a crisis. And so sometimes, so like, let's say husband and wife, they're kind of like on the rocks and then their kid gets injured. They join together and unite, especially to help their kid at the hospital or whatever it is. And you see that form of crisis as actually seeking connection. So then later, you know, we subconsciously learn in our nervous system, like, oh, if I can create a little drama, or if I can start a little fight, or if I can, we start a big new house renovation that's going to be really stressful, that's going to distract us or pull us together in a way from the underlying problems we have in our relationship. So sometimes I think we seek that stress response because it's more comfortable than maybe the distance that we're feeling from someone, the lack of connection.
It sounds like a little bit of avoidance. Let's not talk about the the issues of the marriage. Let's create a project to focus on that instead.
Yep. Or I simply just don't know. This is a problem I don't know how to solve. We're doing our best. We both care, but we don't know how to solve. Like, one maybe has high desire, sexual desire, and one has low sexual desire. It's like, how do we solve this? I don't know. Let's renovate the house. Like, let's distract ourselves from that. And it's short-term, it's adaptive. Long-term, it's not sustainable.
Yeah. And I really love that you're emphasizing that. Short-term, it's adaptive and it's meant to help us hunker down during tough times.
Yeah.
But we're not to live our whole life in tough times.
That's right. So we have to, when we look at anxiety, we can't just look at like fixing it when it goes wrong. We can't just look at making it feel better. We have to look at helping things go right. We have to look at helping build a life that's sustainable and has more clarity. And when things do go wrong, we build in times, or when things are stressful and hard, we have built-in ability to like restore ourselves. We build into our schedule time during the week to like recalibrate. We build into our month and our year time to restore ourselves. And that's going to be part of our systems that we build to really manage anxiety. It can't just be like, oh, when I feel stressed, what's my coping skill? It's not how it works.
Aligning with the rhythms that our body needs for activation and then recovery.
Yeah.
Activation and recovery.
Yeah. We're supposed to get activated. We're supposed to get activated. It's part of being human. We should care. We should get stressed out once in a while. We should get excited. We should get worried once in a while. As long as we have the healthy ability to restore our sense of calm and our sense of security and safety, then it's absolutely healthy and adaptive.
And that is how anxiety is to help us right mm-hmm. there. It's to help us achieve the life that we want to live, accomplish yeah. that are the most important to us.
Yeah, anxiety is not the enemy, right? Anxiety is not the problem here. The problem is we need to learn how to work with our anxiety to help it be an intentional way that we use to guide us toward the values that we really care about. And we should feel some anxiety if we're not living the life we care about. Like if I believe I should be a kind person and I'm like being a jerk to people and I feel anxious about that, I should feel some anxiety. That should motivate me to change and be the kind of person I want to be. But we shouldn't let emotions run our lives. We should choose our values first.
I love that. Align our purpose, our values, and then those obstacles that hold us from those values, that's what we use our stress response for. I love that. Thank you, Emma.
And thank you for tuning into this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. I will have links for you in the show notes that are related to this topic. I will have a free guide that I've put together on the essential sequence. This is the essential sequence that our body comes out of stored trauma, and it involves the stress response. I will also include the link to the foundational journey if you are ready to start safely opening up the stored trauma in your body. And I will have a link for a one-on-one Biology of Trauma health coaching session if you would find this personalized time with one of my Biology of Trauma health coaches helpful for looking at your stress response and how to support that. If you are really interested in this topic, I also have a few other podcast episodes that you might want to check out. Podcast number 60 was about false anxiety and how that's related to stress. And then episode number 25 was on why is it so hard to slow down, how that's related to stored trauma. I want to remind you that it is very important to support our biology for our body's stress response. If you are one that relates to having chronic stress, for example, you may want to consider taking Magnesium Calm. This is actually the magnesium treonate, a form of magnesium that is most helpful for calming down the inflammation and microglia in our brain and nervous system that get activated and can keep us in anxiety. Finally, it's been so lovely to be here with you. I'm Dr. Amy, your host for this Biology of Trauma podcast. Until next episode, lots of love.
Thank you for joining me today. If you enjoyed today's show, be sure to subscribe. We definitely will learn, laugh, and sometimes cry together on this healing journey, and you won't want to miss an episode. Give my podcast 5 stars, share it with a friend or colleague. If you felt an impact, as it truly helps get the word out and breaking the paradigm of how we do trauma work. I look forward to seeing you back here next week. Until then, this is your host, Dr. Amy, sending you lots of love.